Mr. Batterson, Reel 8. Now, we got to... you were in this old colonial army camp at Rennes.
Yes, prison camp. They was colonial troops were billeted in there, but it was covered in dust and that because it hadn't been used for quite a few months. And the palliasses we got was filled with straw or paper, shredded paper and stuff like that. It wasn't a proper bed, and it was all filthy. And when we asked for some cleaning materials, we never got any. They just intended holding us there, ready to move on. And while we were there, a German officer came on a big horse, and he came into the camp, because I think we were there for about a fortnight. I'm not even certain about that. And he said, could he see Newman, Colonel Newman? And so they let him in to see Colonel Newman, and he said he wants to make it known that one of the commandos on my boat was worthy of a good award from the British government, and he recommended that he gets a really good award for bravery. And finally, it finished up that Tommy Durant got the VC, and I think it was through the German recommending to Newman that, and whether it got through from Newman through the Red Cross or whatever, but at that time Newman hadn't been given the VC himself. So I mean, that was a good thing really for the German to do that.
And that was the Captain Paul of the Jaguar.
It could have been him that passed the message on. I'm not saying that it was him that came into the camp. I don't think it was. I think it was an army officer that came into the camp. But while he was in there, we managed to talk the German to let Newman have a round the compound on his horse, which he did, actually. He let him have a couple of strides round the compound.
What did you think of Newman? Did you know who he was, really, at the time?
We knew who he was within... anybody would, within minutes of meeting up with him...
What was he
had
like?
...any conversation. Very jovial kind of chap, and down to earth, and he knew what he was doing all the time. And he more or less instilled things into other people, so that they near enough followed his example. He was a great chap.
And I believe you saw some of the French civilians, and that gave you an idea.
Tell
me about that, because that was quite interesting what they were doing.
In this camp in Rennes, where they took us to, it was a matter of about hundreds. It's hard to judge. Within 100 yards of the main gate was this main road that ran by. And, of course, the French people that lived locally had got to know that there was a load of new English prisoners come in, and they must have heard something about the raid. And they were walking by the top of the street and doing this, putting their fingers up the side of the nose and threatening to scratch their nose, and they were actually giving the V sign. And we could see that. Well, at the time, the Germans let them stand there and do these things, but after a while, when that many people came, and they were causing annoyance to the Germans, and so they ordered them all away, and they could only walk by in odd ones and twos after that, because the Germans didn't like them all hanging about and making a fuss of us, really.
So what happened next, then?
They couldn't do much for us, but they showed us their enthusiasm to get rid of the Germans. And then, after that, after we'd been there for so long...
You were there about 3 or 4 weeks?
Yeah, I can't remember. You see, times like that, you don't take much notice of how long you are. And, because with no notebooks and things to write diaries, and you had a job to get hold of paper in Germany, in any case, or France, or anywhere else for that matter, and you have to rely on your memory. But I should say 2 or 3 weeks, we were in Rennes, and then they brought us out and put us in these cattle wagons. And that's what they were cattle wagons, they weren't railway wagons, and shipped us off. And what with the war going on, the train just couldn't set off and go to where you were going. You'd be pulled up and stopped at all various places all the way across France, and we didn't know where we was going to. We finished up at Wilhelmshaven.
That's where you were going.
Yeah.
Now, on the way, tell me what the cattle truck was like inside it.
It was just like ordinary cattle truck, and a bucket for you to do your mess in, and there were sliding doors on either side, and they was always kept shut while we was moving. And then higher up on the side of the wagon was a little opening with bars and everything on to let fresh air in. And the at various times, I think we was on that train for 2 to 3 days, but it's hard to say.
Now, you were trying to escape. Tell me about that.
Well, we found a piece of bar that had been used to reinforce the wagon, as it had got damaged by cattle and things in general use. And we found this piece of bar that helped us to lever some of these things up. And the floorboarding on the wagon was cross-laminated, so that one layer went one way and another one, and it made it very hard to get through, especially with no tools. But this iron bar that we found, a flat piece of metal, must have been about 18 inches long, 2 inches wide, and about between quarter and half an inch thick, and we used that to quite good effect to break the floor through. And on these various, while the train was moving, we could make a bit of a row, because the guard was either on top of the roof or at the end of the thing. They didn't travel in the wagon with us, and we could, while we're travelling, we could make quite a few dents in the floor. And we made an hole near enough, big enough to get out through. And the plan was that the next time we stopped where it was convenient, some of us would slip through the wagon floor onto the railway line and away. But what we didn't know, this last stop we made, there was all commandos and navy and everything all mixed up in these different wagons. But when we got to the last stop we made, they split us up and separated the commandos from the navy. And we had some soup there that looked like Salvation Army, but it wouldn't be. and it was some quite good soup compared with some of the other meals that we used to have. It was rubbish, most of it, but this soup was really nice, and I thought, well, that's, if we're going to get trekked like this, it would be lovely.
Now, you'd had a bit of a, before we just get on to, you'd had a bit of a row with a guard during a break. Tell us about that. Not you personally, but I mean, you know, you had stops, didn't you? Tell me about that.
Well, as you know, when you get a change in your diet and things like that, and getting the poor quality of food that you was given to eat, a lot of people suffered with diarrhoea and dysentery and stuff like that. And the door was open about, we'd stopped, and the door was open, happened 2 or 3 inches. Not big enough for a man to get through, but still, it was there, and we asked the guard to let him use the toilet. Well, there was never wasn't such a thing as a toilet, but asked them to be able to go to the loo, and they wouldn't let us out. So we lifted this commando, he'd got the dysentery very bad, and aimed his behind through the open space, and he did it through there, or he was trying to, when the guard spotted him. And he come dashing up with his bayonet, trying to stick him in the behind. Well, we saw what was going to happen, so we lowered him down out of the way. And this German corps shouting, you can't come and shit with impunity on the German railways like that. So we kept him well clear of the doorway, and he kept jamming his bayonet through. And after he'd done that 2 or 3 times, one of the lads got this bar and he hooked it behind the gun, where the gun, the bayonet fastened onto the gun, and he stopped him withdrawing it, you see, and shoved it through one time too many. And all his mates that were on the other wagons was all laughing at him because he couldn't get his gun out. So he said if we didn't release it, he was going to fire at us. And so we thought, well, he's suffered enough, and all his mates laughing at him. We said, well, let us go to the toilet when we want to. Like, he didn't then, but at a later date, he did used to make sure that our door was open, and if he was going to let us out onto the railway lines for a bit of a walk up and down, ours was always one of the first to be able to get out onto the line after that.
Now, what happened when you got to Wilmshaven? You were split up then into the two groups. And what happened then?
They put us on different trains. Where we had this lovely soup, that's when they put us on different trains.
Was that at Wilmshaven?
No, it was just not very far away. And the commandos went somewhere else. They didn't come into Wilmshaven with us. And they must have sent them to one of the main stalags. And they took us to Wilmshaven, all the Navy personnel, for interrogation. And we finished up in the... before we got there, they marched us through this park, and it was evening time, about as near as I can say 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening. We don't really know, and I had no watch, and I don't think many of the lads had, but you had to guess at time. And this park they were marching us through in Wilhelmshaven was full of German soldiers and the young ladies all having a stroll round or laid down on the grass, and the guards were taking as much notice of them as they were of us. So I thought, well, there's a chance to get away here. Even though it was full of Germans, I was only in what you could be taken as civilian clothes. It weren't a uniform. To that extent, he wasn't a naval uniform, and only got a sweater and a pair of dark trousers and Wellington boots and stockings. So three boot stockings, and so I just slipped out of the crowd, and as they went marching on, I was sat down, and I thought, reckoning to tie my shoelace, but I've got no shoelace, and I got Wellington boots, and they must have been at least 100 yards up through the park, all the rest of our party and the guards, and I just thought, well, it's time for me to slip away now, and I just stood up, and one of the sailors, the German sailors nearby with his young lady, shouted in German to the guards, "Hey, you've left one behind," you know, something to that effect, and he came dashing back, and it was no good me trying to tell him I'm trying to fasten my shoelaces when I got Wellington boots on. And he gave me a few kicks up the behind and made me hurry up and join the rest of them. And then when we got in this, out of the park and up to the main barracks at Willems Arden, it was
the naval barracks.
The main naval base, and it was steps. I don't know. It must have been 5 or 6 stories high, because all we were doing, we're marching up steps and steps, right until we got right up to the top, just under the roof. And that's where we were billeted, just under the roof in this main barracks. And it was the same thing again. A palliasse and a couple of pillars all filled with straw or shredded paper and stuff like that. And picked one out, and they locked you up in these rooms. And soon after we'd got in, we got no food again that day, I don't think. And some of the lads said, "There's something funny with this pillar." And anyway, we settled down into the beds, and it appears that it had not been used for quite a while, and there were mice in these things. Well,
in the pillows?
Yeah, and as I lay down, after a while, one of the lads, "Oh, there's something in this," and he chucked it across the room, and then within 2 or 3 minutes, there was the same thing in mine, and I think every set of mattresses and pillows in that floor had got loads of mice in. And whether the Germans had been giving them stuff or whether they'd found their own food, but it was it was very unsettling to lay down on a pillow and find mice wriggling about inside.
So, what happened next then?
Well, that's when they took us down for interrogation.
Now, what do you remember of that?
After the next day, I think it was early on the next day when we actually started interviewing us, and they took 2 men out of the room and took them down, and we didn't see them again that day. And then they took 2 more at intervals, and they weren't in any hurry, they just took it nice and steady. And I think it must have been the second or the third day before they took me. Well, when we didn't see them coming back into the room, we didn't know what was happening to them. And we did our best not to tell them anything. And when they got me into the room, they said, "Well, this boat you was on," they didn't mention that they'd got my boat at that time. And I tried to describe it in as awkward a way as I could, and I put the officers' quarters on the ML up forward and things like that. Mixed everything up and tried to make it look feasible, but not at all looking what our ML looked like. And so that went okay first day, and then the next day, come back again, and we told him a few more bits of untruths and you're asking all things about the rain. And while they were talking, they were always hinting that the chap at the side of them in civilian clothes was a Red Cross man from Switzerland, and he'd come to find out how we were going on. But they were always asking different things in between and as to how things were in England and things like that. And of course, we didn't think really they'd be worried about things like that, but they were. They wanted to know just how things were in England. And of course, we didn't tell them no more than we were forced to. But after the second day of these interviews, he asked me about something else on the boat, and I said, oh no, that was such and such a thing. And he says, well, do you know, he says, you'd no need to try and kid us with all this thing, because we captured your boat and we know just what it's like. And we've got, oh, he'd already shown me some plans of an ML, which I tried to deny was an ML, by saying it was ours were different to that. And he said, it's no good you trying to kid us on about this boat. So this is an exact copy of your boat. And because they were made, a B-class ML was made to order, same as the Yanks started building Liberty boats. They were one after another, all more or less the same, for mass production. And, of course, after all I'd been trying to kid him on, it was a real farce. And one of the lads, Billy Kerr from Glasgow, they took him in for interview, and he was a typical Glaswegian, actually. He was full of life, and he'd tell them anything, and he kidded him on, and in between these interviews, he had a big box of Player cigarettes on the desk, and he'd say, have a cigarette, and you'd have one, and you'd try and get as many of these cigarettes as you could get, flipping them and putting flip ends in your pockets. They'd already given us, by the way, a packet of French cigarettes that first morning we were there, but they weren't the same to try and smoke them as they were English cigarettes. And Billy Kerr, when he went in, he kidded him on all the way through, and he kept having a couple of puffs at one of these fags and pulling it out and putting it in his pocket, practically a full cigarette. And so they asked him something else, and he was reaching for the cigarette box, and the German officer that was conducting the interview said, slap the lid down. He says, no, you can't have any more. And so Billy weren't finished at that. He says, well, if I tell you something else about our crew, could I have one then? And so the German says, yes, all right. And so let him have another cigarette. And he says, well, we had a ship's cat. That was the only thing he was going to tell him about. Oh, they'd earlier asked him what he did on board ship. And he said, how many men there were in the crew and things like that. And so Billy said, I was the cook on board ship. And so the German said, well, if you was a cook, how many men were you cooking for? He says, oh, I don't know. He used to make a big bowl of soup, stew, and he'd come in and help himself. And then when it were empty, I used to make some more. He says, so I don't really know how many was in the crew. But that last one did it when he told him about the cat. He said, we had a ship's cat. And so German really got excited at that and kicked him out of the office and sent him back. He says, don't bring him in here for interview again. I've done with him. And when he got back to the place where we were all assembled, he got about 8 fags. Some had been partly smoked, and he got an old one as well that had never been touched. So he was a pretty good lad, was Billy.
You had your suspicions about that there was a Red Cross representative.
Yes, as we were going up these steps, we had to go down one floor, I believe, or possibly two, to go to a toilet. If you ever wanted to go to a toilet, the guard used to unlock the door and take you one at a time and take you to the toilet and bring you back again. And one of these trips to the toilet, looking out through the window into the yard, there's a big posh car coming, and a chap in uniform in it got out and come into the barracks. And then later on during the interviews, we had the suspicion that this chap that was in the car was it was supposedly to be a Red Cross officer, a Red Cross man visiting to find out how we were going on, and instead of that, it was a German thing, a German officer, more or less in civilian clothes, but trying to make us think he was a civilian, and saw him through the window, looking down into the yard, and so that's put paid to that one. They couldn't kid us on with that one anymore.
Now, you teased the guards a lot. There's a couple of things. Sort of practical jokes. Tell us about that.
He was supposed to, with these cigarettes again, this packet of French cigarettes, they wouldn't let us have any matches or lights. But if we wanted a light for a cigarette, we had to knock on the door, and the German guard that was stood there all the time had to open the door, give us a light, and then we'd light a cigarette. And as soon as one man had lit his cigarette, he'd blow the match out, and then as soon as that match had gone out, somebody else would come up and want a light. And he always had to strike a fresh match every time he gave everybody a light. And he used to get a bit annoyed with it. The guard did it, depending. Different men, different people. Some people a lot more lenient than others. And so one time we were banging on the door for many a while, and the guard wouldn't take any notice. And so we all started singing, I think it was Rule Britannia or something, a song similar to that. We all started singing. We started singing Rule Britannia, something similar about the Navy being the finest fleet and all that. But, and one of the German sergeant majors come dashing in with a machine gun, because they all got these submachine guns and things, semi-automatics, and he said, if you don't shut up singing, like, I'm going to shoot some of you. And I think he would have done. And so we had to more or less pack that one in. But
and you used to go to the toilet more than necessary as well?
Oh, well, always. As soon as one had come back, I'd just let the guard settle down at the door again, and they'd knock on it. And that's one of the reasons why they wouldn't come and open the door, because we used to have him on a bit of string if we could. Because, as I say, different men, different guards, different times. But they definitely didn't like it. But we didn't let them see we were down at all. We kept on top of them with that. And being in the top naval barracks in Germany at Wilhelmshaven, it must have annoyed them quite a bit.